House Judiciary is in session. We're doing better. It's only 7 minutes after one. And, but I would ask the members that after Energy Council, when we, you know, start to measure our remaining time, that we try to measure it to begin at one rather than at some time after one, because time will become more precious. And, Madam Vice Chair, I saw many times when Senator McGuire was here till 5 p.m., and I'd rather be here till 4:45 than 5 if we had the chance. So, okay, so with that, we are first going to take up
117.
Yes, I want to take up 117, and I don't see that Tom Wright is here. That's what I was looking for, but I think we can address it pretty well. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tam Cook has worked on this bill, and I've talked with Mr. Wright about the work draft she has prepared. The member should have the M, as in Mary, version in front of us. Does everybody have a copy of that?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, just for housekeeping purposes. In attendance, Rep. Grunberg, Rep. Lynn, Rep. Coghill, Rep. Ramers, Rep. Dahlstrom, Rep. Holm. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And she basically redrafted the bill to make it flow well. And the language allows the general rule is a 30-day notice of a special session. Oh, I'd like to move the CS.
Thank you.
And if somebody object for...
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, may I continue?
Yes, please. Oh, thank
okay.
you.
That the general rule is that it's 30 days notice of a special session, unless, on line 13, sub A, the proclamation is issued under AS 2623020K, which we discussed last time, that dealt with the expenditure of certain funds in certain types of disasters. Sub B, the governor would be permitted to call a special session, not with that unusual 5-day notice provision, as in subsection K, for other types of disaster. And the members should have in front of them also a copy of the statute that's referenced there, AS 2623-900, which defines disaster very broadly to include everything in 020 and 040. So it does include terrorist attacks as a type of disaster. So this...
Do members have 26.23900?
I was kind of starting.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What this does is accomplish exactly what we asked at our last meeting. Sub C says, as the bill previously said, the rule doesn't apply while both houses are in regular or special session. And sub D adopts the amendment that I had offered that was accepted if the proclamation is issued within 1 hour after the second house has adjourned from a regular or special session. And through the chair, Mr. Wright, I had taken your name in vain, and I thought you were in agreement with
this. Mr. Chairman, my apologies for being late. I was up conversing in the office with somebody, and I'd like to extend my apologies. But Representative Grunberg is right, and we are happy with the CS the way it is.
If I may, Mr. Wright, first of all, you look good today. And secondly, you cannot imagine after 2+ years in the legislature what a pleasure it is to have the opportunity to accept an apology from you. And I just want to revel in it for a second. Okay.
Okay. Now you know how I feel when the speaker does that to me.
Yes, Representative Grunberg, outstanding. Thank you for your assistance. You've made this a better bill, as you often do.
I remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
Objection is removed. We close public comment. Is there any other discussion amongst the members on this bill? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion. Ms. Elstrom?
Mr. Chair, I would move the CS for House Bill 117, the judiciary version 25-LS0458-M with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Then this bill passes from committee. Welcome to judiciary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members.
Okay, before us now is esteemed Representative Gatto. We are so happy to have you here. Thank you for coming to present to us. This is House Bill 88. And the CS needs to be introduced to committee.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I would move that we adopt for discussion purposes the K as in kilo version.
Thank you. We have before us the K version. Representative Gatto, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right off the bat, I'm intrigued by 88 as being very symmetrical. When I read the numbers, I was thoughtful of that. I call this bill in my own mind a line in the sand, and I'm going to back up a little bit and say it was in 1956, my dad, I still remember, bought a 56 Ford, and we had to order a radio separately. And the radio, some people, was considered a distraction from driving. But to others, it said, well, it's a good way to keep awake when you're going to have monotonous in driving. Well, we've progressed to tapes. Well, 8-tracks, I guess, came first. 4-tracks, 8-tracks. Tapes, CDs, all of which were okay. If they kept you from falling asleep, they had an advantage. But when we reached monitors that require that you look at the monitor for entertainment, that became over the line. And if indeed watching the monitor resulted in your own death, I would not be here with a bill trying to prevent it. But I... If all you ever did was drive off the road into a pole, I would say if you're crazy enough to want to do that, proceed. But my big concern is this often results in head-ons, and it results in even in small traffic situations where you can run into a pedestrian. So because it is such a distraction, it's not possible to have this entertainment device without watching it. Otherwise, there's absolutely no need to have it in the car. And in previously we had talked about a equipment. Well, let me talk about the gentleman that actually killed the people in Anchorage, where he had a interlock device that said as long as the emergency brake was on, you could watch the monitor. But when you released the emergency brake, the monitor went off. So that was a nice little interlock device to prevent you from watching while the emergency brake was off. But he managed to defeat that. Then he had it plugged in and operating. Person in the seat next to him said he was watching it on and off. And also his defense was, well, he simply reached down to pick up a can of Coke or something like that. I'm here mostly to say that I'm primary goal is to prevent other people from being terribly injured by an individual who wants to watch a monitor while he's driving. And the bill is carefully structured to say the monitor may not be viewable because it's sometimes easy to defeat the intent as the previous driver did by simply disabling a device that would have prevented him from watching it. So with this one, doesn't matter what he disables. If it's viewable, then it's illegal. With that, Mr. Chair, I stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Representative Gatto. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gatto, I total agreement with the intent of your bill. Question for you, though. I have in my car the most wonderful gift that my husband has ever given me, and that is this GPS monitoring system, because I can get lost going around the block. So I have an option of watching the screen or having a voice talk to me while the screen is going. And that's what I do. The voice, you know, will say in a third of a mile, you turn right and you turn here. Mm-hmm. and I can punch in whatever address I want. My reading of this bill is that that would make that illegal. Okay, can you clarify that for me?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. It is not illegal, Representative Dahlstrom, through the chair. Page 2, line 11 specifically exempts navigation and global positioning video monitors. By the way, we have some people online from the industry, and we have Annie Carpinetti here to describe the difference, answer technical questions, and to describe the difference between this and the State Affairs CS for the record.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, the point of it was
you can decide
to take a quick glance at a GPS or a map or any other device or not, and look at it for a moment when you want to look at it or stop to look at it. When the car chase occurs on your TV program, it's not an option to, unless you have a TiVo in your car too, to delay it and drive through the traffic intersection and then return to it. The viewing device that is a TV is intended for you to watch as opposed to a GPS, which is an aid. And I believe we dealt with this issue of cell phones also and specifically eliminated them because if my cell phone rings and I want to type in, oh my gosh, I've got to answer this, I can delay that. I can delay that and say, listen, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me now. You know, we're cars on my left, right, and front, and rear, and not do it. And so we exempted cell phones because some cell phones do have viewing devices that act as monitors. So very carefully, GPS's, cell phones, and some other exclusions are listed there.
Other questions for the sponsor? See, this comes with a zero fiscal note. Representative Donald? Representative Grunberg, you're a co-prime sponsor on this. Is that correct?
Yes.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cockrell?
Probably just a comment. This is a little bit different than the bill that we saw in State Affairs, and so yeah, it does deal with the fact that you can answer a BlackBerry, which does have a screen on it.
No.
And that was one of the questions I brought up in there, and I see the language has clarified that. But it seemed to me that it would have been illegal because of the screen in the State Affairs Order.
Mr. Chair, I'd like Ms. Carpinetti, I think you're going to be talking about what we've done to make this version different from State Affairs, and I would ask, it doesn't do what you're saying, Ms. Carpinetti, if she could explain.
I need that clarified.
If she could.
For the committee, we do have Ms. Carpinetti, if you come up. And,
oh, it does what you said.
And Lieutenant Dial is also available to answer questions. Representative Grunberg?
He's wrong. I'm not on record.
Yeah. This is the day for abject apologies. Karen Lidster is correcting me, too. So I've corrected all around. We have Ms. Carpinetti from law, we have somebody from Department of Public Safety, and all will soon become clear.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Faith Springsley Journal.
Hi, Annie. How are you?
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law, and I appreciate your listening to me now because I have to at least
yes,
myself. I have worked with Representative Grunberg and various people for years on this bill, and I think it keeps getting better. I think this version will be the most prosecutable that we have seen. It does exclude cell phones and similar personal devices that are used for verbal communication, but it does not include iPods with little movies on it that a driver can see from a normal driving position if they are if they're watching a movie.
It does include that, you say.
It does include it if they're watching it and it's on while they're driving.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just asking to clarify that. So if you have an iPod, a lot of people have these little. My father, for example, has one of these little things installed in his car that the iPod just slips right into and plugs in, and it does have a screen. And so they would have to actually be watching a movie on it for it to be illegal, but if they're just scrolling through and playing music like a stereo, then they'd be fine?
I think through the chair, the bill doesn't require us to prove that they're actually watching. What it would require us to prove for a prosecution is that it was operating while the person was driving and it was visible to the person while they were driving.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And when you say operating, you mean the device operating or a movie? I mean, for instance, if you have an iPod and you have movies stored on it, mm-hmm. but you have no intention of watching them while you're driving, you're using it simply as an extension of your radio. Mm-hmm. How in prosecuting this would you be able to tell? I don't want to make it illegal for somebody who has this stored on their iPod but isn't intending to use it.
Through the chair, neither did the sponsor, and neither did we. So the exclusion on page 2, line 5, says portable cellular telephones or personal data assistance being used for verbal communication. And I consider music to be verbal communication, like a radio.
Satisfied?
Well.
Want to think about it?
I want to think, yeah.
Okay. Representative Coghill, did you have any more follow-up questions? Or
I just think that for the answer to Representative Holmes' question, page 2, line 8, audio equipment information functions and controls.
That's what they say.
That is what it's saying, displaying only. So I think you'd have to, at this point, prosecutably be able to and I guess we need to know what the level of proof is, but without some doubt, prove that they were in fact watching a video screen rather than an audio screen.
That's correct. Well, through the chair, the bill is set up so that what we would have to prove is the person was driving, that a screen was visible to that person, and that it was operating the visible display while the person was driving. Even still, if that display is audio equipment information, functions, or control, we couldn't bring a prosecution. If it was positioning or other navigational equipment, we couldn't bring a prosecution.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carpinetti, you have on page 3, section sub F, the various different charges that can happen. What levels of proof are we talking about, starting from the misdemeanor going up?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, all levels of proof are beyond a reasonable doubt. These are crimes.
Right.
So, the penalties relate to harm caused by the person's driving. If it's death, if the person kills people while they're watching a movie while they're driving, or a movie is it's a serious crime. It's a Class A felony.
Annie, I got stopped for not wearing my seatbelt this summer. It changed the way that I conduct business in this building in committee, because bad bills are better stopped in committee than on the floor, and I will never forget that lesson, ever. Cheap $15 lesson. I'll never forget it, ever.
Good.
Yes. Is this a primary offense or is this a secondary offense? Can I be stopped for having my head down and the police officer presumes that I'm watching something and stops me as a primary offense, in which case it's an interesting additional tool of encroachment for the authorities, which I found to be a significant overreach this summer when they spun around in a busy intersection to stop me for not wearing my seatbelt. Is this a primary offense?
Through the chair, I believe it is a primary offense, but the practical reality is your the attention of a police officer would be drawn to you by your driving. I mean, I'm sure they would hardly notice. It would be difficult to notice if a screen was playing and you were driving perfectly normally. But
when they made the same argument for shoulder harnesses, I'll just point out.
And if I can comment, very often you can look out, cars parked side by side waiting for a traffic light. You can look over and pretty much see across the entire front of the car that there's a screen there and operating. About that time, police car, passenger car, going to have a reason to suggest we move over to the side and have a chat.
And I think you would want a police officer to do that so that you could stop that movie before somebody got hurt rather than after. I think that's the justification.
Okay. more pondering? Any more thoughts? Representative Grunberg?
I think to answer Representative Holmes' question, the factual scenario is it's a portable unit that fits in a holder that's attached to the dashboard. The question is, how would the prosecution proceed? And through the chair to Ms. Carpinetti, I think this is the way it would work. The state would prove that you had this set up with the unit in the holder, and that it was operating while you were moving. And then, if in fact it was only being used to listen to, and it was just a blank screen or something like that, I think that would be an affirmative defense. You would say that it was there, I wasn't watching it, it wasn't being used, it was only being used for the verbal communication. Is that not how it would work?
I believe that prosecution wouldn't take place to begin with, because it simply doesn't apply to situations like that. So it wouldn't, you wouldn't even get to the point where you had to raise an affirmative defense.
It'd be just exempted. Okay.
Okay. Representative Coghill, and then
I'm trying to think of the scenario that you might have that very same device on the front have a fender bender, in which case, for example, the you discharge your
airbag.
Then after you're trying to untangle all this thing, it could have been very well that they were watching this, but by the time all the commotion is over, you have the device with no screen on it. I suppose at that point, you're only left with the evidence that you can gather. But is the device there enough to suppose that there might have been some distraction there?
Through the chair, it wouldn't be enough on its own. It would depend on the facts, of course, and what we knew. But just because you had a screen that was there, I mean, this doesn't apply to screens that are disabled when you start driving. So we would have to have other information to support a prosecution.
Thank you. For the record, our majority leader, Rep. Samuels, has joined us. Representative Gatto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for iPod owners. If it's sitting in its cradle on the dashboard playing music, is there a screen, or is it a black screen that has nothing on it?
Don't have a
screen. Does it have dance motions and waves?
You can watch a movie on it.
Pardon me?
You can watch a movie on it.
While you're listening.
That's the point. If it's playing music, is there anything visible? Watching a movie, clearly, it's visible. But if a policeman were to look in there, he would see an activity on the screen or a blank or a black screen. And if there is any activity with music, then I'm going to bring that up.
Sound like a man with an iPod to me.
I have one, and mine is so obsolete. It is in the Stone Age because it's 2 years old. And within a couple of years, I would think that you will have all sorts of things that appear constantly.
My iPod is just has lists of the songs that it's playing on the screen when it's playing songs. It's pretty old.
Yes. My iPod is the radio.
Hey, my iPod, you have Representative Coghill.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, additional questions for the sponsor? Trooper Dial is with us to answer questions. Does anybody have any questions for Trooper Dial or any remaining questions for Ms. Carpinetti, whose husband was looking especially wonderful today in the gallery?
You've got to watch that.
You look good. I thought all the justices looked good today.
That reputation here.
Yes, well.
Trooper Dial.
Yes. Questions for Trooper Dial?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Maybe what we should just ask the trooper how he would see a primary offense being noticed and then charged.
Okay. Trooper Dial, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am.
Nice to hear your voice, Lieutenant. Could you address Representative Coghill's concern, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with Alaska State Troopers. I can tell you that our officers do from time to time see vehicles that have those rear-mounted TV monitors, And if you can kind of envision that at night, that's actually quite easy to see because of the flashing colors. It's kind of like looking at a TV screen, you know, in a darkened living room. To answer your question about stopping a vehicle where that would be in the dash, you know, so a lot of our trooper vehicles nowadays are expeditions or other vehicles that are high set. Some of our troopers actually drive pickup trucks. So if, for example, we were at a traffic stop, as was mentioned by one of the other representatives, and we looked down and saw that full motion video was playing, we could stop that car under present law. We could also, if at night we saw that same type of flashing light scenario in a darkened car but couldn't quite see the monitor, I believe that would be probable cause as well for a stop under the current statutes. So I guess I don't really see that this would change that much our ability to stop a vehicle for violation of what the current law is or what the current or what the law could become. But those are mostly just visual observations, and there's always that possibility that we could have, you know, a concerned citizen call in and make a report as well.
Very good. Are there other questions for Representative Dahlstrom?
Just a comment. You know, just last week I had a situation where I was stopped at a light and looked over, and there was like a larger, I think it was a Suburban next to me, with three seats in it. All three seats, there was a driver, nobody in the passenger seat there, but the back seats were full of kids. There was a monitor right directly behind the head of the driver that the kids were watching, but there was a monitor also right in front of where the passenger would have been sitting in the front with the same exact movie playing. Now, I could see that from where I was sitting, and I could also see the driver, and the driver was looking straight ahead the entire time, never once saw him. I mean, I watched him knowing this was, you know, coming up, and, you know, I don't know. Maybe that equipment, they don't have the ability to turn off the front thing, or, you know, what would happen in that case, Trooper Dial, if you were to see that situation?
Through the chair, Representative Dahlstrom, boy, that's really hard to say unless I could actually see it. I think the individual officer would have to make a determination of, you know, if it was, let's say, a flip-down visor on the passenger side, is there some sort of device or storage compartment mounted to the ceiling that would somewhat impair the driver from seeing that? Is there other barrier there that would prevent them from seeing that? If there was, then probably a traffic stop would not be warranted. If there wasn't, and it appeared that the driver could simply glance over and watch the movie, a traffic stop would be warranted, and we probably would investigate further at that point.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I totally agree with the intent of this bill. I have some uneasiness about the unintended consequences, and when I hear Trooper Dial state that this doesn't change really that much in what they can already do, that raises that question again. So I have a little bit of concern there, although the intent is absolutely great.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is basically the same bill that we had and passed the House overwhelmingly last year. Just really one or two minor changes. But through the chair, Representative Dahlstrom, this scenario, if in fact, under the facts, it's permanently mounted and it's visible to the driver, that would be illegal.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dahlstrom?
Okay, so Representative Gruenberg is one of the co-sponsors. Could you comment on what Trooper Dial just spoke about, the fact that it doesn't really change anything that's already existing in law?
Yes. It is already a traffic violation to do this. What this does is it increases the penalties, so you don't have to show, for a felony, you don't have to show that the person was negligent. If, in fact, the driving causes physical injury and the vehicle has this and it's mounted, that is essentially negligence per se. It makes it easier to prosecute.
Mr. Chair, if I may clarify what I said, In my comments, I was trying to refer to the ability for us to make a traffic stop. We currently have that ability for monitors that are in vehicles, and if this bill were to pass, we would still retain that ability. I wasn't trying to say that the law would essentially be the same.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions for Lieutenant Dial? Any questions for the sponsor? Is there anybody here who would like to speak to House Bill 88? Okay, seeing none, I'll close public testimony. Is there any committee discussion on House Bill 88? Representative Samuels?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being late, so I hope I'm not replowing old ground here, but portable computer on page 1, line 10, I guess I question for the sponsor. So if somebody's in my driver, in the passenger seat, typing a document, it's a visual display, and I can see it. I'm sitting there, they've got it in their lap, and they're typing away. That's illegal now.
Through the chair.
Yes, Representative Grimberg.
That is correct. That language was added in the State Affairs Committee in House Bill 12 2 years ago. We don't want somebody who's operating their computer and looking at that rather than on the road.
I said your passenger.
Chairman, the way that I read it is if my passenger is, so my wife is sitting there typing a document, I'm driving her to work, she's typing a document, and it's in sight, I'm not looking at it, she's just typing away, but a portable computer providing a visual, and it can be viewed. I could reach over and read the document if I so chose, but therefore nobody in the driver in the passenger seat, whether it be an RV or a car, the way I read the language says, because it can be viewed by me, the driver, cannot do it.
Samuels, I had the same concern, but when that was what I leaned over and asked Jane about, but my understanding, I'll direct this to the sponsor, is I thought you had to satisfy all three of these conditions. So if you were, in fact, looking over at the passenger seat while they were typing a document, yes, you would be negligent. But that is the intent of the bill sponsors. But if the passenger were doing it and you were driving, then you would not satisfy all three. Is that correct? I'm asking either of you. Representative Cotto?
Mr. Chairman, the way I envision it, your spouse or friend is operating a laptop in the right seat. If indeed the laptop is tilted so you can watch whatever's on it, you're right, that's a violation. Typically, the typical situation would be to say, hey, take a look at this. We're not watching a film. If it's turned the other way, where you're looking at it mostly sideways, I don't know that that's called viewable. But you're right, you could commit the violation if indeed it's visible.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you. That's the way that I'm reading it, and I agree with Jane and you, Mr. Chairman. I'm driving the vehicle. The vehicle has a personal computer. It's displayed, like that one right there is to me. Mm-hmm. And it's operating while I'm driving the car. So you can't have anybody in the passenger seat doing anything anymore. I know what the intent is. I get the intent. I'm with you on the intent. But that's what it says, is if somebody's in the passenger seat, like that computer right there is, that's the way that I'm reading it.
One moment, please. Now, the concern that I have is I think since you're looking at me, that you're not in violation of the proposed law. But I'm concerned that it's a primary that it's a primary offense and not a secondary offense, and that I'm already hassled enough by our friends in uniform who offended me this summer by stopping me in the middle of a busy intersection for not wearing my safety belt. And I have not forgotten that lesson on behalf of ordinary average Alaskans across the state. So now you have two concerns before you represent.
One of your concerns?
Yes.
I learned long ago when I first learned the legislative process never to argue with the committee chair. But on line 1, page 11, that can be viewed. It doesn't say viewing. It can be viewed. So if it's there, And my friend is typing a document, a letter, whatever they're doing, in the passenger seat, just like that computer right there, and I'm looking at you, I'm in violation if I'm driving. Doesn't matter if I'm looking at it or not. That's the way that I'm reading.
Just to add to that?
Yes.
Number three, it's just operating. It doesn't have to be even in view. Am I wrong?
In you have to do all three.
On line three, the monitor or visual display is operating. At that point, I don't even know that it really has to even be in view.
But it has to be all three.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would suggest we ask Lieutenant Dial, as a practical matter, how this is going to be enforced. I don't think that he's going to enforce it in that manner. I have an answer. I'd like to hear what he has to say first.
Lieutenant Dial, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Mr. Chair, I guess I would put it this way. I've been a law enforcement officer for 17 years now, and I've never issued a single citation for this. What I would envision would be that this would be used to address those situations like we had out on the Seward Highway where two people were killed. And I would also suspect that prosecution would be very hard, not only proof beyond a reasonable doubt, but a DA's office who would want to have us clearly show that that this was extremely egregious conduct. I don't see the people driving down the road with a laptop in the passenger side, somebody typing away on it. I just really don't envision officers running out and stopping a lot of cars in that situation. But I do see this to pretty much address some of the technology changes that we are facing with our vehicles. And like it's been previously mentioned, the promotion of that in shows like Pimp My Ride, where, you know, we're putting monitors all over these cars and it's distracting the drivers. So I hope that kind of answers that question somewhat.
Thank you, Trooper Dial. Lieutenant, or Representative Grunberg.
I haven't been called Lieutenant since I was in the Navy. But, Mr. Chair, the language on line 12 is a driver in a normal driving position. If the person had to crane, you know, normally if you have a little portable, you can't see the thing unless you're right in front of it. And it was not, I want to clear on the record, it's not the intent to prohibit somebody from typing, unless it's really turned and you're really looking. If somebody's operating a portable, that would not be viewable from somebody normally in a normal driving position.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kaka.
Maybe I should have had Annie talk to me about this, but I thought if you had all three of these, then do they all have to be true, or just only part of them be true in order to make them apply? Because if it has a television, a video monitor, and or a portable computer, and it's operating, then you got a problem. I mean, and I'm envisioning myself, for example, from time to time, I'll drive to Anchorage. It's not unusual for my wife to have a laptop computer storing up some emails. It's just not unusual, and it's not unusual for me to see it, you know. So so I'm driving along. My wife has a computer. A trooper drives by in one of those nice, big, tall pickup trucks, sees my wife working on it, pulls me over.
Representative Gatto?
Just, you know, I'm trying to get down to earth on this. Somebody's typing on a laptop, and you're all the way in the driver's seat. It's at about a 15-degree angle to you anyway. I just cannot imagine you caring. But you might. She might say, hey, look at this email I just sent to Aunt Mary. You're likely thing. And when I was looking at Representative Samuels, looking at that monitor, the angle, when you look at the typical LCD screen, the angle is important. You don't see it unless it's at least 45 degrees or so, and it's unlikely, unless that person is typing with this thing sideways and is leaning over on the shifter, that that's likely to happen. I understand it's all possible. It's possible, but we do have to satisfy all three of these, and then we have to have somebody notice it. And then we have to have reasonable cause to believe you were trying to write email or read an email. I don't see that those things are likely to be combined in all these three.
Representative Gatto, here's how it strikes me, just to kind of frame it for a moment, is speed limit is 30, and we're talking about getting stopped for going 32 and a 30, that we're interpreting the law specifically, and you're, and I'm just making an observation, not a judgment at all, that if you get stopped and the trooper dial stops you, and I don't mean for this offense, but for a speeding citation, he said, well, I thought it was a 30. Well, how fast was I going? And trooper dial says, well, you're going 32. I said, you're stopping me for going 2 miles over the speed limit. It strikes me that we're picking at this bill in that way, that we're defining it as 32 and a 30. And that seems to be your point of view, is that you would have to be at an odd angle. You would have to deviate from these three conditions. And we're all saying 30 means 30. 30 doesn't mean 32. In this case, we're the trooper. We're stop pulling your bill over. But I'm not suggesting that we're going to pull it over. I'm just saying that it's a primary offense, and so we're taking a minute to examine it here. Representative Gatto. Representative Ellsberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a comment just kind of along that line, too. Trooper Dial just testified that the intent of this is for examples like what happened on the Seward Highway with an impact of cars that occurred there. And if it was a computer, you would never know who was looking where and what, and the computer could end up in Potter Flat somewhere. You know, I mean, you wouldn't be able to prove anything by that. But, I mean, and then I guess if somebody called and called in and said they saw it, I don't know how that stands up in court, but.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruber.
Not a complicated bill. The thing is, if the monitor is in a position where it can be viewed by somebody in a normal driving position, that's illegal. And the reason we're doing it is because these things are being used, it's a dangerous practice, and it can save some lives. And it's a simple proposition, it may be the kind of thing that's going to inconvenience people who want to watch DVDs while they're driving, but they shouldn't be doing that, because that makes it dangerous and people can die as a result. And that's a judgment call. You may not agree, or you may, but the purpose is to prevent that kind of activity.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. There's nothing in the bill that prevents you from reading a book while you're driving or from doing stupid things. The bill's not a perfect bill. You can do stupid things. But I think we should make it somewhat inconvenient with regards to, you can stop reading a book and pick up right where you were. But when when the excitement occurs on TV, I think you drift longer and longer to trying to watch your program. You're not watching your spouse's computer. You're not reading your book or magazine. You can do a lot of things that are distracting, but they're usually momentary. The idea of a DVD, a computer screen, that has a movie on it, is you are supposed to be distracted, or it's a terrible movie and you've turned it off. You haven't picked the one that's right for you. That's what we're trying to prevent, is the undivided attention towards some device, and saying by having an undivided attention, you are now putting at risk yourself, everyone in your car, and gosh knows who else. If you have a small monitor in front of you that is the same as the monitor behind you or so, that would be illegal. It may not be important to you and say, well, I wasn't really watching it. It was on, but I wasn't watching it. And number two, when an accident occurs, there's all number of people that said, I was behind, the guy passed me, and I saw in his car, because I drive an Excursion, that he had a movie playing, because it was not a little screen. It was this big. And so when the accident happens, they say, Lieutenant Dial, not more than a minute ago, he was watching this, and the thing is still on or not still on, This is all simply evidence gathering. Can we convict somebody because it was in his car? Probably going to have to meet an awful lot of the rules to say, okay, this was clearly being done. But it does put people on notice that this is not a tolerable offense.
Questions? President Coghill?
I agree with that. I agree that maybe billboards can be equally distracting. I've been almost any town that I've driven to looking for street signs can be distracting. So you're right, distractions and even bad behavior, stupid behavior can happen. I guess the concern I have is that we're going to pick the one out. I agree, people shouldn't be watching video games or any other thing while they're driving. I guess my concern is that we're going to felony behavior. You have to prove, we're making a Class C felony if there's an injury. And we're a misdemeanor. We're going from an infraction or an offense to a misdemeanor. And and that's why I was asking Ms. Hannick-Corpinetti what the proof level was. If it's beyond a reasonable doubt, I think you really would have to have some pretty clear probable cause. But with the court cases that we've argued right here in this room with some of the laws we've passed, I am concerned. I'm concerned that what we mean is what we say. And also not watch video schemes while you're driving, I suppose. It would be a whole lot more clearer than this, but I'm just concerned that this is not used for the intended purpose. No disrespect to the police, but I'm just concerned. So I'm going to put that concern out there. I think the prosecutable language in here, as Annie said, is probably as good as I see. This is, I think, the third time I've seen this one. The third time, and it is better, but this is the first time I think we've gone into the felony arena on this one?
No, this bill was the same as it was.
The felony issue was the same. So, and I did vote for it the last time because the issue that I look for is if somebody's doing foolish behavior and they hurt somebody, I want them held accountable for it. But I also know that if I if we now give a reason for the police to stop everybody who has a laptop in front of their car, I'm not game for that. I'm just not. So that's kind of the struggle I've had, is because I came in here with every intention of supporting the bill, but the more I think about what would a policeman do in a judgment call where my wife is even looking at some of those silly things you get on the internet that are YouTube or whatever it is. I think my kid's looking at it.
Yeah.
But I mean, if she was viewing one of those things and it was within my view, but I had no intention of watching it, one of those really nice big trooper vehicles pull by, I get pulled over, I'm sure.
Yes, Representative Coghill, you're one of my friends listed on my MySpace site.
I went way beyond my understanding, but I'm just concerned that those kind of things become the target rather than the real safety issue that I think we're involved in. That's the kind of the personal rights area that I'm kind of looking at.
Representative Gatto, can I ask you a question? Is it possible to maintain on page 3, lines 5 through 10, which I care a great deal about and appreciate as the core intent of the bill, is it possible to retain those and as well to retain lines 3 and 4, but to address this in such a way that it is not a primary offense to stop somebody? Because that's the concern that I hear from Rep. Samuels, Dahlstrom, myself, and Coghill.
But not from me, Mr. Chair.
but not from Representative Lynn. Because it appears to be, no, I don't think anybody is taking exception to the fact that if somebody is hurt or injured or, God forbid, killed, that there shouldn't be a degree of culpability. But I think you are hearing a concern that it's creating another primary offense opportunity for law enforcement to look into the privacy, my privacy, and the privacy of my vehicle. And that is an encroachment of some concern to me. Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
It's already an infraction. It's already a primary offense. The only, Lieutenant Dial can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Ms. Carpinetti's here anymore. But the only offense that I'm aware of that was not a primary offense was the seatbelt law. That was a very, very unusual statute. And that was put in as a result of a huge floor fight a number of years ago when I was on the floor. But this, if the thing is that with respect to the felonies, those would have occurred, the prosecution would occur after an accident. It's, you know, there's nobody stopping anybody because the car is already stopped and there's been a serious injury or something like that. Well, I suppose it could have been a hit-run kind of a situation, but that's a very serious situation. The misdemeanor is a serious issue. The person's driving along, and if you don't allow the police to pull somebody over when they're doing that, that really guts the bill. I would strongly object to that approach, Mr. Chairman.
Can we ask Lieutenant Dial to again address whether this is a primary offense, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is a primary offense, and I would just add that the current statute, which is 13 AAC 04260, would also allow us to pull over the driver of a car if he was simply wearing headphones, listening to his iPod. So it's a primary offense as it is. This new law would be a primary offense as well.
We can continue some conversation, but I think we should just do this for a little while.
Good one.
We should consider it for a little while longer and try and satisfy the concerns expressed here by all of the members.
Not all the members.
Not all the members.
Reverend, no, I, you know, I understand the intent of this bill, and granted, it was many, many years ago, but I was a cop at one time, pulled people over for various offenses. DVDs had not been invented at that time, nor had seatbelts, for that matter, been invented at that time, and I suffered a broken arm because we didn't have one, but because of my broken arm, we did get them. But nonetheless, it wasn't my goal to run around in my police car trying to invade people's personal privacy, just trying to see if they, you know, they had some obvious violation of the law. And I just, I think we're all concerned about maintaining, you know, right to privacy and these types of things, but I think, you know, we could carry that in a manner of speaking to extremes. I think, you know, I support the bill, I support the concept of the bill. I think there are some privacy concerns, and I'm concerned about being hit by a meteorite this afternoon, too, but it's not really my major concern. I just think we're spending too much time. We're spending more and more time on on less and less.
Thank you, Representative Sanders.
Thank you. I've got a question for the officer who's online. Is it currently a primary offense on the scenario that I have, where the laptop is in the passenger's lap and my passenger is typing something? Is that now a primary offense if it can be viewed by me? They're not watching a movie, or even if they are watching a movie, whatever it is they're doing, it's a potential distraction to me. Is that a primary offense currently?
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, it would have to be mounted to the vehicle. It says basically that statute says a motor vehicle driven in the state may not be equipped with the television's type receiving equipment located where the viewer screen is visible from the driver's seat. So I would take that to mean that, you know, installed in. So to my knowledge, we would not currently stop a vehicle for a passenger having a laptop going.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kronberg?
On last year, when we had this bill, it was installed in the vehicle or something like that. There was a lot of concern. The opposite argument was made that if you're driving and you're watching this and it's not installed, that's just as dangerous. And, I mean, the alternative is we do nothing, but it's either going to be installed and then you won't prosecute some people who are really driving very dangerously, or it's not installed and conceivably you have a computer or something that's out there. But the intent of this, Mr. Chair, is simply to prevent people from viewing this instead of watching the road. And any law, whether it's a seatbelt law or a sexual abuse law or a property joyriding situation, any law is capable of being unjustly enforced. And that, I'll wait until you're finished. And that is why the prosecutors and the police and the judges and jury have some common sense discretion. And in law school, we spent lots of time dealing with ridiculous hypotheticals to show how a law could be misapplied. And there are whole law books that, and I had them in law school, where every case is a ridiculous application of a common sense principle. And we have to rely.
Yes, Representative Burr.
We have to rely on the police and the whole justice system with its limited resources using some common sense. And I don't think that we can, in this body, manage legislation for every possible misuse. And I realize that you were offended at having had your seatbelt off and being caught in that situation. And I think you're not the only person around here who's been in that situation. But we've got to legislate for the general common sense approach. And this is something I think that's very reasonable if it's properly applied.
Representative Gatto?
Mr. Chair, I have another committee, but I'm going to leave just with this comment, and I believe it's okay if you insist on holding it over, to ask Lieutenant Dial, if you absolutely knew there was a driver driving and a passenger watching using a laptop, what would your action be? With that, I would have to leave until next time. Or the action of 10 of your people that are also troopers, what would their actions be? Would anybody take any action toward the vehicle that had a passenger using a laptop?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I've been a trooper for 17 years. I do not know of a single case where it's even been considered where, you know, a passenger is doing a lawful activity and the driver is not doing anything reckless where we would intervene and link the two together like that. So as it currently stands, or even with this law passing, I just don't see that being a scenario that would play out with any of my peers or myself where we would cite the driver under those circumstances.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
This has a Finance Committee referral. I personally, I am definitely not in favor of somebody watching a video while they're driving down the road. And if we get there at the end of the day where the public safety good is brought up, I'm just concerned that the unintended consequence of the not the police enforcing, but the dueling in court over the verbs and nouns gets us into this problem. And so that's why I think we need to kind of push the limit when we're asking these questions. So if there is a laptop in the front seat, the trooper may not say anything about it, but the defense or the prosecutor might say something about it because it's in the verbs. It's in the nouns. And so that's the question I have. At the end of the day, I think they have to show a reasonable, beyond a reasonable doubt. And I actually tend to agree with Mr. Gruenberg's assessment on the system to hammer out the issues. But I'm just saying that with some reserve, because we have given a lot of language in here that gives, for every sentence we put in the statute, there's a couple sentences that could be written about how we should prosecute or defend it. So I think it was a good exercise in my mind pushing against it, but for me, I wouldn't hold it in committee.
Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you. I apologize for getting hot under the collar. Happens once in a while. And if any member feels that they want to, or the chair wants to hold the bill and work on it, do any other language change or anything, take out laptop or whatever, I want you folks to feel comfortable, because you're the people who are going to have to vote on this. And I know you're not jacking the bill around. I know you have legitimate comments. And if there's something you want to do with the bill, it's okay. It's offered out there. And I don't want the vehemence of my comments to distract you from what you think is good public policy.
It's, Representative Gruenberg, it is a pleasure to have this committee focused on the specificity of this bill, and to have you participate on the other side of the transaction or the equation.
Lesson learned. What goes around comes around.
It's fascinating. That being said, I would like to remind the committee that today is Wednesday. Is that right? Today's Wednesday. Friday, we have a confirmation hearing with the Attorney General. And because of circumstances next week, I believe we will hear no bills next week. Isn't that right, Jane? So this would be held until the week following. And I would ask Representative Gruenberg, I would be inclined to move the bill and have you confer with some of your colleagues here in the Judiciary Committee, just to better frame
we'll
their
do
concerns
that.
So that,
yeah,
so that, honorable as you are, that some, yeah, of those issues are addressed as this moves to the Finance Committee. And that would probably
We'll do that, Mr. Chair, immediately while people are thinking about this. And, you know, I just want this to be a good bill. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right. With that, we'd entertain a motion to move 88 from committee.
Chairman, I move House Bill 88 from committee, with the individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, if any.
The CS.
The CS.
Yes, CS version M. Is that right?
K.
Version K.
I move the CS for House Bill 88 version K from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing none, CS for House Bill 88 moves from committee.
Can we go off the record for a minute?
Yes, and let's go back on the record. We have Representative Roses is with us, and before us is House Bill 145. And my understanding now is that House Bill 145 has picked up an indeterminate fiscal note from where, Jane? You said that. Corrections.
Law.
DPS. And public safety.
And we will be getting one from public defenders about the OPM.
And one from
All Living Americans.
From Law et al. With that, we're delighted to have you before us, Representative Roses, and take us through your bill. And we know it's a work in progress. So we'd like to have a very constructive dialogue about it and give you some excellent direction today. We will hear this bill, but we do not have the intent to move this bill today. But just to exchange some ideas and have a very some clear direction, so that when we reconvene again the week after next, we will be in a position to have a CS before us that we can move. Because I think that the committee is very supportive of the intent, but we're as you saw, we got bogged down with laptops in the passenger seat, and this is has a longer hook on it than that does, inappropriately so. So with that, we're delighted to have you and Crystal here. If you'll both introduce yourselves for the record. And
thank you very much. Representative Bob Roses, District 19.
Crystal Novotny, staff for Representative Roses.
Nice to see you both.
Thank you very much. What I'd like to do before we start the introduction of the bill, I want to assure you that there will be absolutely no discussion in my presentation that has anything to do with seatbelt 30 miles per hour or computers in your lap. However, there will be some discussion in the presentation of this bill regarding computers, and specifically using computers for the online enticement for the purpose of trying to entice someone into sexual activity. So that there is a transition point there, but we'll go from there. Thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss House Bill 45. I was pleased to hear you say you have no intention of moving it today. It was going to be my request that you not move it today. Having had discussions with each of you individually, I understand there are some concerns, and I had concerns as well. I mean, anytime you draft a piece of legislation that has sentencing laws involved with it, there's a great deal of thought that goes into it. And I understand the concerns, but my biggest concern is that we as legislators are charged with the responsibility of doing everything we can to protect those citizens that aren't able to protect themselves. And the way our laws are currently written when it comes to sexual abuse of a minor, there are certain age groups, in my opinion, that are left out of that mix. And I know there was a considerable amount of work that was done on this legislation last year, and I think, in my opinion, there were great strides made in trying to protect some of those that were not previously protected. And having taught in the high schools and at the university for over 20 years, I have been very involved with the age group of folks that we're talking about. And I understand the dynamic of the maturity levels of people that are 16, 17, and 18 years old. And I understand, converse to that, the immaturity levels of some of them as well as the immaturity levels of people in their 20s and 30s. And quite frankly, I know some very immature 50-year-olds. But that, however, does not excuse them from the law.
How about Chairman?
I did not point to any individual people, nor would I be so bold as to do that.
You know, she didn't mention 74.
You're in the clear, Representative.
You're in the clear.
I'm not going to speak about anybody that approaches the age of 60 either, since I'm not far away. The intent of the bill is, as was the last bill, it's simple, but the ramifications of it are very complicated. The simple approach that we're making on this bill is we want to extend the age of consent to 18. We want to draw a bright line. Those that are under 18 are considered minors. Those that are over 18 are going to be considered adults. And this bill draws that distinction. The other thing that this bill does is it brings into focus the practice of online enticement. We've seen more and more of this in television. We've seen more and more of this on television shows that are on a regular basis. We've seen it in some of the news broadcasts that are on in terms of arrests that have been made for this type of activity. And I just thought it was high time that we tried to do something that we could to protect some of those that I feel are sort of left there between a rock and a hard place in terms of trying to prosecute for what they consider to be crimes, even though they aren't listed as crimes on our books. And so that was my intent. The one that has done the majority of the work on this bill for me, and certainly was my idea to bring this forward, and I have had individuals in the community that have asked me to do this, and felt very strongly about it in order to do this, but Crystal has been the one that has taken the major responsibility of putting this together, and I'm fortunate that I have staff that's capable of doing that and doing it very well. So I'm going to turn a lot of the remarks over to Crystal, and I'm going to sit and watch her do her thing because she's good at it.
I might point out Ms. Novotny here has been of great assistance in our ongoing drama of the ethics legislation, and she's very hard worker, very precise, and very competent, and does a tremendous job in that, so I'm sure it'll be no less good here.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn, but if you keep saying that, she's going to be asking for a raise.
Ms. Novotny.
Thank you. Vice Chair Dahlstrom and members of the committee, what we're trying to accomplish with House Bill 145 is, as Representative Rosa stated, we're trying to draw the bright line of a minor is under 18 and an adult is over 18. We've included a four-year age difference, so therefore we're not prosecuting a 19-year-old that, you know, is engaging in sexual penetration with a 17-year-old because they're in the same peer group. And we're taking into consideration those peer groups. It's when you jump outside of that peer group that it's pretty much a policy call where we want to draw the line and say, look, you know, this isn't good. You know, things need to be changed. Because right now, you know, if a 16-year-old and a 50-year-old, you know, engage, nothing can be said, nothing can be done if she gives her consent. She may go cry to her mom and say, oh, my God, what have I done? But there's nothing other than that that can be done. So with this, we're trying to tighten that up a little bit and, you know, give those 16 and 17-year-olds, you know, a way to say, okay, this is bad, I can't do that. And it's going to take time for some change. But when you know, new laws always take a little bit of time to get in the flow with that. And we're open for questions.
I'm sure.
Representative Coghill.
The law that we passed last year, we dealt with some of the issues in here, and online enticement is one of those issues. In your research, and my apologies for not asking us the other day when you're in there, mm-hmm. but in the research that you've done, what were some of the prosecutorial problems? Are we addressing some of that, or are we just raising the bar? We want to just go another bar up. Maybe Representative Roses can answer that. Are we answering a specific problem that came through the course, or are we now just saying we need to raise the bar up because of our prosecutions or because of name your policy call?
I think it's both. One of the things that, you know, when you have personal friends whose family is impacted by this, it has, you know, have a very emotional impact on you. And that's what got me started on this to begin with. And then as we delved into it and found that there were these what appears to be, and as we bring this bill up next time when we have an opportunity to go farther, you're going to hear testimony from the North Pole police chief and what his concerns are and the lines, whether they're bright or not bright, and how difficult it is for him as a law enforcement officer to be able to deal with the issues where you have older individuals that are then hanging around some of the middle schools with the intent of trying to entice people, and for his ability to be able to work in that arena. So those are some of the concerns that he brought to us that we're trying to clean up. And also, having dealt with an individual whose child was involved in this situation, the frustration that they felt in going to police officer and going to prosecutors and going to everybody they could in the state to try to get some relief because their child had been, you know, enticed from the age of 13 over the internet, and then the year that the child turned 16 and the parents were out attending a funeral for the grandmother is when the individual flew up from Colorado and then decided he knew. He studied the laws. He knew that 16 was the line that he had to make. And within a short amount of time of her turning 16, he was here on her doorstep. And the very thing that we as parents fear the most for our kids is exactly what happened. And so those are the kind of things that I think I want to draw a brighter line to. And I realize it's not going to stop an awful lot of what goes on. But, you know, it's not our responsibility to be there to oversee every incident, but it is our responsibility to try to put tools in place that prosecutors and police officers have in order to equip them to do the kind of job that we need them to do to protect our citizens. And so the answer to your question is both.
Okay. What was the question?
Follow up.
The question was for Representative Gruenberg. What brought the bill forward? Was it a court case or what? And the personal testimony that he gave. So then the next question is, as we began to look at this bill before we came into committee, there were some questions that I had, and some of them had to do with the 20 to 17-year-old cohort. Is that the issue that you're thinking about coming back with a CS? Is that something we need to debate out today, or how do you want to proceed with that?
The issue that I had and that I heard fairly strongly from the majority of the folks on this committee is, as we discussed the bill and as Crystal discussed it with you and your staff, was two areas. One had to do with, we have an awful lot of young people that are graduating from high school and going on to college at the age of 17. We have a lot of folks in college that are in their mid to late 20s. And so now what you're saying is that, any relationship that builds at that level, we have now forced that age difference to be a much wider spread, because take the University of Alaska for Anchorage. The average age of the student attending UAA in Anchorage is 28 and a half years old. It's not what it used to be where they were 17 to 21. I mean, that dynamic has shifted. So that is a concern we need to try and address. The other issue that was brought up was there are many cultures in which it's not uncommon for there to be marriage contracts, and we have these kinds of situations that exist in some of the cultures in Alaska where there are marriage contracts where it may be a 17-year-old that is married to a 30-year-old. This would prohibit that, kind of a situation for occurrence. So we have to address that issue in some way, shape, or form. The other issue was brought up is, we allow individuals at the age of, 16 or 17 years old to seek emancipation. So do we then deal with a person that is technically considered for legal purposes on their own and supposed to be operating as adult, but yet they haven't reached the age of adulthood that we define in this bill? So that's an area that we need to take a look at. Quite frankly, when these concerns came up, I was pondering whether or not this bill should move forward. But there's that part of me that said, hasn't been a single obstacle in my life where I've tried to accomplish an objective that I've thought was worthwhile that didn't have some obstacles in its way or some bumps in the road, and I'm not going to stop doing what I've done the rest of my life, so we're forging ahead. And if it means it's slower, if it means it takes a while to get it there, the objective is strong enough, and we have a strong enough desire in my office that we're going to do whatever we need to make this work to satisfy your needs but yet accomplish our objective as best we can. So those are the areas that we have. And another one was the sentencing. There's a pretty strict number of years of prosecution that someone would be facing, or incarceration that someone would be facing, when maybe there's an age of 21 and 17. Both were perfectly consensual. Nobody had any issue brought forward, but then all of a sudden somebody gets upset with the other and then turns them in. And so now you've got a situation where we have somebody potentially going to prison for a very long period of time, over that kind of a situation. So that's another area that some of you brought up that, quite frankly, we thought a lot about that too. And so we're willing to try and see what we can do to make this work, because we have an awful lot of young people out there that are depending on us for protection. So are their parents.
Follow up, and then Rep. Samuels.
So then the next question, because I'll be with you on trying to forge forward for an answer, and I agree with your approach of age of majority for these things. However, these problems arise. So we're not the only state in the union that has an age limit. In fact, I think we're one of the few that wanders down to the 16-year-old age bracket. And so I think it's right to raise it up. So have you done any research of how other states have handled some of the questions that we're bringing up, or do you intend to then take some of these questions and research through the other states' styles of law?
The answer is yes to both. We have done research. We have a pretty good indication of how many states do have 18 as the age of consent. Crystal was spending quite a bit of time researching all those, and I said, I think you're doing a little bit of overkill here. I don't think you need to look at every state that has 18 and see what the laws are. But little did I know that we were going to have as much scrutiny with individuals. And so that is an area where we're going to continue some research. So the answer is yes, we have. And the answer is yes, we're going to continue.
Okay. Any way I can be helped, let me know.
Thanks, Rep. Samuels.
Thank you, Thank you, Chair. I've got a couple of questions for you. Every time we have these sentencing bills on sex crimes comes up, you know, if you're 50 years old and you have a relationship with a 17-year-old, then you can just throw the key away, throw them off the bridge. But the problem always has come back to the 21-year-old. Your split would be a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old. Is there any kind of a standard, first of all, for knowingly? That you know she's 17 as opposed to she told you she was 18. You know, the 21-year-old guy meets her in a bar because she walked in with her sister's ID. You know, those types of things, you know, real-world scenarios where the 17-year-old doesn't tell anybody she's 17 because she wants the 21-year-old boyfriend. And then the day he turns 22, now he's a felon, and on his record the rest of his life he is a sex offender. So that scenario, first of all.
Sure. Let me defer the answer to Representative Gruenberg because we had that exact conversation.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, there's some cases in Alaska that a reasonable mistake of fact as to age is an affirmative defense.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, or are you
No, that's it's always in every sentencing, you always, every sex offender bill that comes through, you always look at this situation far different than you do the rest of them, which is the true problem, is the 50-year-old man and the high school girl. So.
Right. And unfortunately, it's not always just men that are abusers. Women are abusers also. So I'm sure that bill is clear that it's whoever is abusing a minor. Are there any other, Representative Gruenberg?
Yeah, just as you do your research and you get your cases, I mean your statutes and stuff, just like I asked for this matrix, which I want to pursue that with you and my staff, it would help me if you could give us, or research, a list of the states and what their ages are, and maybe the citation to the statute. I'm sure Ledge Research can help you on that. What I had asked Ms. Novotny to do is this very helpful, and what I'm going to ask and Deneen here to help too, if necessary, to list by ages if the one person is 16, and the other person is 17. 16, 16, 16, 17, 16, you know, so we see by ages what the requirements are. So it's not by statute, but by age scenarios, because in some of them, they have to be in position of authority, and this is a very confusing area. But then we'll have a matrix that'll not only help this committee, but other members of the legislature, too, because, and then, as changes are made in the laws in the future, this matrix can really help in this area because this comes up not every legislature, but quite often.
And we will do the very best we can to make this as clear and understandable and as succinct as possible. I realize, even though I've only been here for, what, is it 39 days now?
One-third of the session.
Don't be so sure. That 39 days, I can tell you that within the last 10 days or so, I've realized that, you know, that what seems simple, what seems reasonable, what seems rational, and what seems logical doesn't always play out when you put it on paper. And not a single one of you, when we approached this committee for discussion on this bill, there wasn't a single one of you that didn't feel the same way I did, that you wanted to do what was right, but you're also very conscious of the fact that we don't want to incarcerate somebody, you know, for 99 years because they made some stupid act and, you know, they're going to have to pay for it for the rest of their life. But on the other hand, you know, we all realize that we have a group of individuals that need our protection, and how we get there without the severe unintended consequences is indeed what's at play here, and we understand that. So we're going to do what we can to try and draw the bright lines of distinction. Sounds like an ethics bill, doesn't it? To draw the bright lines of distinction here so it is very clear, and we'll see what we can do. And we'll work on it, and hopefully we can get to that point.
Thank you, Representative Roses. Are there any further questions or requests for the sponsor of this bill from the committee? Okay, well, so we're going to hold this bill, HB 145, and with that, there's no further business, so we will adjourn this meeting, and the time is 2:35.